This is an interview with Barbara Sweeney for the SEC Historical Society Virtual Museum and Archive of the History of Financial Regulation. I'm William Thomas, and the date is October 4th, 2013. And we're outside here on a very nice day in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Thanks very much for agreeing to speak with us. We usually start by going a little bit over your personal background, where you're from, if what your parents did was relevant to the career your path took. Sometimes people talk a little bit about that. And then we get pretty quickly to, you know, your education.
Okay. Well, I grew up in a small town in Pennsylvania, very small town, about 15,000 people. And then my family, when I was ending my senior year in high school, moved to Indiana. And I entered the University of Indiana and went into the business school. I graduated from the business school in Indiana, and I really, I didn't know where my career was going to go and didn't have great plans. But I was living in Columbus, Indiana, where my family lived, and it's the home of Cummins Engine Company. And the chairman of Cummins Engine Company at that time was a man by the name of Irwin Miller. And he actually ran, he was Forbes magazine candidate for president at back in the early, late 60s, early 70s.
You finished at Indiana in 69?
Yes.
Okay.
And I was, at the time, Irwin Miller had a private financial management firm called Irwin Management Company in Columbus, Indiana. And they hired only the top graduates of the MBA programs across the country. So every year they would have a recruiting process where they would hire these top graduates. When I graduated, I was the first undergraduate ever hired by his company. And I worked in asset allocation for the management firm. And then I ended up going into his foundation and doing a lot of work. At the time, Columbus, Indiana was a little bit too small of a town for me, and I wanted to branch out. So I actually just got in my car one day and came to Washington, D.C., without a job,
mm-hmm.
and wanted to start over. I did have a connection from Irwin Management Company here in their political office, and I worked for a period of time as a receptionist for the United Steelworkers of America until I found out what I was going to do. I then got recruited by Acacia Life Insurance Company to they were starting a broker-dealer to sell mutual funds and variable annuities, and so I went to work for them. And it was a wonderful career for me. I became a vice president with them. I got registered with my Series 6 at the time through the NASD, and had a great four-year career there. And then wanted to move on. I got recruited away by Freddie Mac. At the time that Freddie Mac was...
What time frame are we in here now?
We're in the... we are like 1974.
Okay.
Okay. 75, mm-hmm. probably. Yeah, 75. I'm much older than you think. And so I went to work for Freddie Mac, and that was really, really fun. That was at the time that they first started to sell the mortgage-backed security through a broker... syndicate. It was a dealer syndicate. And so every Monday we would have an auction for the securities and then go through the process of selling them through the week. And I actually ran the back office and was responsible for registration and also for payment of principal and interest to all of the holders of the mortgage-backed security. So I worked there until 1988. And a funny thing happened, and this is maybe interesting for the historical part, but when I went to work for Acacia in the broker-dealer, I had to go to the NASD to get my fingerprints taken so that I could get my Series 6. And when I went to the NASD, there was something about the place that I really liked. Mm-hmm. And I kept thinking, I want to work there someday. That would just be so great for me.
Was this on K Street?
Yeah, it was on K Street. Yeah. And so, as it turned out, I had been at Freddie Mac now, 13 years. Mm-hmm. Was thinking about my next career move. Also, Freddie Mac was moving out to Reston, and I didn't want to move to Reston. So I started following ads in the Wall Street Journal. And I answered a blind ad in the Wall Street Journal, and it turned out to be NASDAQ. Hmm. And I was hired by NASDAQ.
What do you mean exactly by a blind ad? What were they advertising for?
They were looking for marketing managers, product managers in the financial services, but they didn't say who the company was.
Okay.
So I just applied for the job not knowing who the company was, and it turned out to be NASDAQ. And, of course, NASDAQ at that time was owned by the NASD. So I was very fortunate to be selected for the position after one interview and went to work for NASDAQ in the NASD building. So we are now 1989.
Okay.
And that was at the time that NASDAQ was really putting on a heavy marketing program to try to compete with the New York Stock Exchange to take listings from the stock exchange and have them on NASDAQ. And of course, NASDAQ at that time had a lot of the high-tech companies.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really fun, exciting time working in this arena. And, you know, we weren't so much interested in the regulation of the markets in my area as we were interested in developing the NASDAQ stock market.
So that date, had you been mainly dealing in over-the-counter securities? You mentioned you had to be registered with the NASD, so I know that they have oversight over that, but...
Right. Well, up to that point,
you mean? Up to that point.
Well, no, up to that point, I was involved in mutual funds.
Oh, okay.
And then after mutual funds, when I was at Freddie Mac, I was dealing in mortgage-backed securities.
Okay.
So they weren't over-the-counter securities. At the time that NASDAQ started really doing their marketing program back in 88, 89, they dealt in mostly over-the-counter securities, but they were expanding their range to be what NASDAQ is today.
Right.
So, you know, they don't like the word over-the-counter securities, or that's kind of a thing of the past.
I see.
So anyway, I was with NASDAQ, but as I said, we were owned by the NASD, and I was intrigued by the regulatory side of the NASD, and as part of NASDAQ, I became part of several programs. And this was back in the days when everybody was service-oriented and customer-oriented. And so the NASD wanted to be more service-oriented toward their members, being the brokerage firms, and NASDAQ being more service-oriented toward their clients, the companies who listed on NASDAQ. So they had some committees, some customer service committees, and I got involved in... one of the committees, the internal customer service committee. So I started working very closely with not only people from NASDAQ, but people from the NASD. And at that time, a position became available in the NASD to run the CRD. And the CRD is a Central Registration Depository, which was the registration and licensing of all brokers in the country. So that position became available. They came and asked me if I would consider applying for the position, and I did.
Mm-hmm.
And turned out to be very, very exciting for me. I was selected, and I took over a department in the NASD with about 180 employees. And
had you been overseeing people to that point?
No.
No, not at all.
Okay. No. So this, yeah, but I mean, I had like two or three or four people that worked for me, but not that many. And at Freddie Mac, I had a staff of probably 10 people, but certainly not to the extent of 180-some people. And it was funny because when they asked me to take the job, the job sounded so interesting, I didn't question how many employees I would have. So my first day on the job, when I realized how many employees I had, I nearly panicked. But part of my responsibility at that time was to reorganize the department, manage the department, because at that time they were developing a new system for registration and licensing of the brokers. And one of the gentleman who was running the department at that time was moving over to the technical side to work on the development of the system. So I took his job for managing the department. So we had a call center in the department, and basically the call center was for brokers to call in when they're trying to get their licenses. And then they also developed a public disclosure program where people could call in to get information on brokers. Mm-hmm. So we had, you know, and there was a certain amount of information that was publicly disclosable at that point, like, I would like Barbara Sweeney to be my broker, what states is she registered in, and how long has she been with her firm, and mm-hmm. things like that. So we had a whole call center that handled things like that. Then we had another group that handled just the actual applications of registration for all the brokers. Then we had a group that handled registration and licensing for new firms, mm-hmm. firms that were becoming broker-dealers. Probably the most significant part of the job that we had, and at that time it was very common for brokers to go from one firm to another. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole securities industry was a lot different then, and retail brokers were recruited constantly. And the important thing for them was to be able to leave their firm on a Friday afternoon, be able to start business bringing all their accounts with them to a new firm on Monday morning. So we would work with them to be able to get them to change their licenses. Now, one of the problems was if they had any disciplinary activity in their account, they would not be able to move mm-hmm. that quickly. So we would have to review all of the disciplinary activity and actually rule on whether or not they would be able to transfer. And that would mean getting information from them to complete the files and had a review. We also, in that same area, when someone wanted to become registered to be a broker, as I mentioned to you, I had my fingerprints taken mm-hmm. to get my Series 6. They would have to have their fingerprints taken, and we would get a report. From the FBI, basically fingerprint report on this person. So if they had any thing in their background that was inconsistent with the questions that were asked on the U4 form for a broker, they would have to answer it, and then they would have to provide supporting documentation. One, if they had a felony on their record, they couldn't get registered to sell stock. If they did have a felony, had it been expunged. So we had a whole group that went through all of that. So that was pretty much my job. And I, in addition to working or running that department, there was an interaction with the NASA, North American Securities Administrators Association. That was the association of all the states. So we, in addition to being licensed by the NASD to sell, everybody also had to have state licenses. There were requirements for brokers and for brokerage firms that were consistent among the states and the NASD and the New York Stock Exchange and the American Stock Exchange. So we had to work all of that together and make sure that everybody was in agreement on all the questions and what it took to become licensed and whatever. So in addition to running that department, I became part of the larger group that worked on the registration and licensing and procedures and questions and qualifications. So that was another part of the ballgame. I guess moving forward, you know, I ran that department from, I think it was, let's see, 1993,
mm-hmm.
Until 2001. And during that time, two things happened. One is the registration and licensing system that was being developed by the technology department became live, and it became an interactive registration system where, in addition to NASD running the system from the office in Rockville, every brokerage firm had to come online with that system so that they could do their registration and licensing online rather than through a paper form.
The implementation of these electronic systems is
yes.
something we're definitely very interested in.
Well, this
exploring.
Was huge.
Yeah.
This was very, very huge, and I can talk more about it as
Please
we go.
Please do, yes, absolutely.
Maybe you can ask me some questions. I'll just explain to you how
yeah.
it happened. So we had that where all of the brokerage firms came online, but and additionally to that, at that time, the broker's records were published online so that you as an individual could key in information on a broker and you would get a particular report from the NASD and it would come back to you online. There was a lot, as you can imagine, controversy over that because so many brokers mm-hmm. were terribly upset about information that would be potentially available to the investing public that was on their records. And as a matter of fact, I had death threats against me at the time because people, there were things that people had on their records that they didn't want someone to find out. And it was a really, really difficult time. But in any event, we were able to successfully implement this new system where mm-hmm. all the brokerage firms came online. It completely changed how the registration and licensing of the brokers mm-hmm. Worked.
I should ask, was the availability of the new information in brokers' records advertised as a new requirement separate from the implementation of the new system?
It was not a new requirement, mm-hmm. but it was basically new information that's available.
Right.
Okay, so it was not a new requirement for licensing,
right.
if that's your question.
Yeah, I mean, I guess a requirement as to what information should be broadly available, or if it was information that was in some sense available before but not really accessible, if you
yes,
understand.
That's
me.
Exactly right.
Okay.
Yes, it became more broadly available. Now, two ways. One, it was the mechanism for making it available, and two, information that was not available before became available. So it was a double-edged sword.
Right.
Another thing that was interesting about this system, I have to backtrack a little bit, that we...
Are we in the late 90s by this point? I guess I'm a little bit...
Yeah, so we're in the late 90s.
Okay.
We're in the late 90s, almost 2000.
Okay.
Yeah. The CRD system, at the time that I took it over, when it was more of a manual system, one of the things that we accomplished on an annual basis was that every broker had to renew their license on an annual basis. They had to review their licenses with the NASD and all of their state licenses. All of those renewals came through the CRD system. So we basically would work on Christmas Eve to get all of the renewal information in on all of the brokerage firms and all the brokers plus all of their fees. So we collected every single fee for the NASD for every state. It came through our system. And usually on Christmas Eve, I was sitting in my office calling small brokerage firms that had not submitted their renewal information, telling them that if they did not have their renewal information in by the next day when the system shut down, they would not be able to do business January 1 when the system came up because they had not renewed. So this was a huge, huge part of what we did. And once we got all the renewal information in on Christmas Eve, the system shut down Christmas Day and was shut down until January 1 when we started again with the new licenses. And all of that money that came in to to the NASD, then, as part of the system being shut down, had to be filtered back out to the states to pay all the manure fees for all of these brokers. So it was a huge, huge undertaking, and you can imagine the amount of money that came in and had to go out within that week time frame.
Mm-hmm. Was this at all linked to other initiatives in computerization for tracking trades? I know later on they track audit trails. I was talking to Shelley Boleyn, actually, a little while ago, so we were discussing those sorts of systems.
No, this was totally separate.
Okay, totally separate.
This was totally separate. They're, you know, they had the whole market surveillance system and or market reg system and market surveillance. That was all totally separate from this registration. This simply had to do with, are you registered to sell stock in a particular jurisdiction, and, you know, can you handle my account? Pretty much what it was. So it was one of the most challenging things I have ever done in my life, trying to structure this department, enable in order to handle this, bring all the firms online, keep everybody happy. You know, we had several road shows where we went across the country and talked to the brokerage firms and tried to bring them online. And I guess as part of recognition for my being able to accomplish this, I was made a vice president at the NASD. I remember I had 9 direct reports at that time, managers, the people managed for me, and I brought them into my office. It was like, I think it was February, and I said...
This is 2001?
February 2001, yes. I brought them into my office and said, you know, we have had an incredible 2 years where we have been able to accomplish what we needed to accomplish, to bring all of these firms online, to bring all the regulators online, and to be able to successfully install this new system. And unfortunately, we were not able to be creative in anything, because everything that we had to do, we had to meet the guidelines, we had requirements that we had to fulfill. And we did it successfully. Now, I think our options are open a little bit, where we can start to say, how can we do our job a little better by still meeting all the requirements? And it gave us, I felt it was giving us an opportunity to be just a little more creative in our business. That was a Friday afternoon, and it was a holiday. A meeting with my staff to say, you know, now that we have successfully implemented the system, we can be a little more creative in our work, and how much I was looking forward to working with my staff, because I just felt I had the most wonderful group of people that worked with me and for me. And it was a holiday weekend, and so I came back to the office on Monday morning, or Tuesday morning after the holiday. I turned on my computer and found an email from Mary Shapiro asking me if I would consider changing jobs within the organization and becoming the corporate secretary of NASD. And I was very, very torn, because I loved my job so much. And you know, generally in most organizations, corporate secretaries are lawyers. I'm not a lawyer, number one. Number two, I didn't know how to be a corporate secretary. So I said to my husband, you know, life is going to change. I either accept the job as corporate secretary and I have this whole new challenge. If I don't accept it because I love what I'm doing, they may think that I don't want to advance my career. So I ended up accepting the job as the corporate secretary. And actually, that's how I ended my career. And it was just the most wonderful experience I think I ever had. I mean, I went from a job that I loved to a job I loved even more. And I loved working at the NASD, number one. I thought it was just very professional. I loved the whole idea of the market. My husband was a broker for Merrill Lynch, So I got to know exactly what was happening on the brokerage side, and then, of course, I was involved in the regulatory side, so that was really interesting for me. Became the corporate secretary in March of 01, and you know, the responsibility of the corporate secretary was obviously for all of the corporate records and then to run all of the board meetings. But there was something very significant about the board at the NASD at the time, because we had to have, as a requirement by the SEC, we had to have a particular composition of the board. We had to have X number of representatives on the board or board members who were from the industry. There had to be representation of a large firm, like a large wirehouse. There had to be representation from a small firm. There had to be representation from a mutual fund firm. I can't remember all the other designations at that point, but additionally, there had to be a balance where there was one more member of the public on the board. And public members of the board were people who had no affiliation with the brokerage business. They could be lawyers, they could be heads of corporations, they could be political type figures, but there had to be a balance on the board of people who were in the business and who were public.
Was that new or was that long-standing? I know it was not long after this that the New York Stock Exchange had to accept public members on its board.
It was not new at the time that I took over, but you have to go back and look. This was all a result of the 21A report, and I don't remember the exact date of the 21A report, but these requirements came to be as a result of the 21A report.
I see. Okay.
Yes. Now, at the time, NASD, as I told you, owned NASDAQ. They also owned the American Stock Exchange at that point. So in addition to the balancing requirements for the board, there was a requirement that certain action items approved by the American Stock Exchange board and the NASDAQ board had to be referred to the NASD board for final approval, so that if the NASDAQ board wanted to operate or wanted to vote on a particular action item and implement it, they could do that only after the NASD board also approved it. So this was very, very complicated to learn what was to be referred to the NASD board, known as the parent board, or what could simply be approved by the NASDAQ board or the American Stock Exchange board and go forward. So that was all part of what I had to learn in that role. And then, of course, one of the very important things was to always maintain the balance on the board between public and industry people. And, of course, each year, terms of board members would expire, so then we would have to go into the election process to have the annual meeting to elect new board members. And again, we would have to make sure that we always maintain that balancing requirement.
Where would the recommendations for board members come from, typically?
There was a nominating committee,
okay.
And a nominating committee also had to be balanced according to public and member firm. So there were all these requirements that had to be followed all the time. There was also what was known as the Small Firm Advisory Board, and that was a group of only small firms, and I can't remember now what the cutoff line was to be defined as a small firm, but it's in the documentation somewhere. So we had to have a small firm advisory board. We had to conduct elections for those people, and one of the members of the small firm advisory board had to be on the board I was generally the chairman of the small firm advisory board that sat on the board. So we had all of that. In addition to all these committees and the board, the NASD was broken up into districts. I think there were 11 districts, and they were geographical districts. Each district had to have a district committee, and the district committee was responsible for regulating that particular district. We conducted those elections as well. Now, when I say regulating that district, it was basically regulating activity by brokers in that district. There was a whole separate section, part of the NASD, which I mentioned earlier, which was market surveillance, where they actually surveilled the trading activities. There was also member regulation activity, where department where they oversaw the regulatory activities. But the district committees basically voted on whether or not, this is hard, let me see if I can get this out properly. Disciplinary activities for, you know, smaller grievances, whatever, mm-hmm. and determined whether or not they had to be referred to a higher authority. So, in addition to all the other committees that we had to hold elections for every one of these district committees as well. And generally, an election got contested. So, in order for someone to get on the ballot for one of these elections, they had to submit X number of petitions, and so we had to go through that whole process, and then we would have to put them on the ballot. So my job pretty much consisted of conducting the board meetings, conducting all of these elections within the districts, the nominating committee, and then, of course, the annual election of board members for the NASD. So in addition to all of that, during this period of time, well, we know what happened September 11th
yes.
of that year. And we, as that part of the NASD, had an office in New York at One Liberty Plaza, which was across the street from the World Trade Center. And we always worked in New York on Mondays and Tuesdays, and then Washington Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. It just so happened that September 11th, we all happened to, it was a Tuesday, and we all happened to be in Washington for a particular meeting that was being held. So we were not there that day.
But you were supposed to have been ordinarily.
Supposed to have ordinarily been in New York.
Yeah.
So I guess that was fortuitous, obviously. But that just became such a critical, critical time because we had to be involved every single day mm-hmm. and coming to work every day with all of the chaos that was going on, because the critical thing was to get the markets opened again.
Yes.
And, you know, there was a group that met daily on the phone, the head of the SEC, the head of the Fed, chairman of the New York Stock Exchange, American Stock Exchange, NASD and NASDAQ, constantly, you know, working to determine when it was appropriate to reopen the markets. And I believe the markets reopened that Friday, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, you can check the records, but I think it was that attack was on a Tuesday, and I mm-hmm. think the markets reopened that Friday. If not that Friday, the following Monday. But I'm something in my mind is...
Yeah.
So that was back in 01, and that was just an incredible challenge, as you can imagine, and frightening, and really kind of changed everything. But we moved on from there, and so then following 01 up until NASD and FINRA merged, the NASD divested itself of all of the ownership of NASDAQ, and in addition to that, the ownership of the American Stock Exchange. So all the rules were changing at that point, but we also had to go through member votes in order to be able to sell the NASDAQ stock and be able to sell the American Stock Exchange stock so that they could become independent. So at that point then, we were focusing on NASD pretty much independently. But then became the question of we've got the regulatory side of the New York Stock Exchange, and we've got NASD. And that's a double burden on the members, because all the brokerage firms that were members of the NASD were members of the New York Stock Exchange, and there was double reporting and double everything. So that's when we decided that it was time to create FINRA, which was the combination of NASD and New York Stock Exchange regulation came together to form FINRA. And that became quite contentious with a lot of the small firms, because they felt that they were not getting a fair deal in all of this. So there were some lawsuits, and member votes had to take place. But by and large, it ultimately happened that the merger took place, and NASD merged with regulatory side of the New York Stock Exchange to create FINRA. Again, we had to go through several votes, and then the board composition completely changed at that point. And there were several more requirements that the board had to be comprised of to be FINRA, and term limits of the boards and whatever. That was at the point that I was ending my career. I basically decided that when I turned 65, I wanted to retire.
Right.
And so I had made my plans known that I was going to retire. But that was, I think I had one more year. So I was fortunate enough to have Marcia Asquith come on the staff, and Marcia worked for me as the assistant corporate secretary.
Okay, we'll be speaking to her later, actually.
Oh, she's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she and I worked together really through that whole period of forming the new board for FINRA, and then she came on as corporate secretary for FINRA when I retired, and you can probably ask me some questions that I can answer, but I mean, that,
yeah,
in a nutshell, is what happened.
One thing that occurs to me is that you must have had an unusually good familiarity with the brokerage industry, having to deal with all of these different elections and coordinating all of these different procedures and that sort of thing. Did that definitely seem to you to be the case? Were you a go-to person in any way for, you know, knowing who is who and where they were and that sort of thing?
I was pretty much a go-to person. As I said, it was such an exciting and challenging job for me, and maybe because I loved it so much, that I developed very, very good relationships with other regulators, with people in the industry, and there was a group called the Association of Registration Managers, which was headed up by the registration people in every brokerage firm, and I developed a very good relationship with them, and it worked, I guess is the best way to say. We had a lot of very, very difficult things that we had to work through, but we were able to do it, and I guess I was a go-to person. Yes.
Yeah.
And I didn't know any of it. I had to learn it all.
Yes.
Everything I learned on the job.
Yeah, I mean, I would think even going back to, you know, your earliest experiences with the securities industry, you didn't have training in that specifically from your early days.
I had a degree in business, business administration from the University of Indiana, and I didn't know, I didn't plan that my career was going to go along these lines.
Right.
It did.
So, as I was mentioning before we began, this interview is being done in conjunction with the creation of a gallery on women in regulation. I was wondering if you could reflect a little bit on your experiences. I mean, you've had experiences with a very large number of organizations going back to 1969, so a very long span of time as well. And so I'm wondering if you could reflect on the number of women who were there, how you know they were treated, your personal experiences, that sort of thing. I mean, I wouldn't even know where to begin, so maybe you could outline it.
As you were asking the question, I was trying to formulate an answer in my head, to be honest, and in my entire career, I never experienced any disrespect as a woman, I guess is a good way to say it. I mean, I always felt that I was treated as an equal. When I worked, when I went to work for Acacia to start the broker-dealer, the man who was president of the broker-dealer is one of my closest friends today, and he, when he hired me, I had never met him. He helped further my career so much by giving me an opportunity to become an officer of the organization. When I went to work at Freddie Mac, there were, I mean, there were certainly more men in situations of power in the organization, but again, I felt very respected and was able to do my job, and I worked with so many people in the brokerage, in you know, the broker-dealer industry there that I never seemed to have any problem. I must say that when I was hired at NASDAQ and the NASD, Mary Shapiro came on board, and of course I had ultimate respect for her, and I believe I owe a lot of my career to Mary Shapiro because she supported me through everything that I did. But Mary was the type of person who, you know, was supportive of all of her employees, whether you were a man or a woman. And so I never experienced any, I always felt like I was treated as a person rather as a, than as a woman through my whole career. So I've I've never experienced anything where I would have said, oh, you know, they're not respecting me because I'm a woman or whatever. Never, ever felt that.
In dealing with brokers, you mentioned in registration and licensing that they can be at times quite hostile.
Yes.
Your position as a woman ever enter into that? No?
Nope, it never did. I felt very confident in my role, and I always felt that I got the respect that I deserved. Now, I will say that I love people. I love dealing with people. I don't like any acrimony, and so I also felt that I was able to negotiate with people to work things out. And I also had a very, very healthy respect for the people in the industry because their job was to sell the securities. These people, if they did not get registered or if they couldn't be working on Monday, that was, they could lose a lot of money. So I always felt that it was my responsibility to work with them in the parameters of the rules. Never bend a rule, but always try to help them. And I think I was recognized as someone who was willing to put in the extra time or, you know, work with people. And the people that worked for me saw that, and I think they also treated people in the same manner. So I don't ever remember having really terrible acrimonious times. The only The only times that I remember acrimony was in my job as corporate secretary, when some of these smaller firm people didn't like who we were putting on the board, and so then they would petition to get themselves on the board. And really, some of them just weren't qualified to be on the board, and they took positions that were not consistent with the way that we were doing business or with the rules of the securities industry. And, you know, sometimes those elections would be pretty difficult. But by and large, we were able to work through it, you know, fairly well. So when I look back on my career, I look back more on how much I learned, how much I learned about the business, how much I learned about people, how much I learned about the rules. So it was a great experience for me.
We're also very interested in these learning experiences. I mean, people mention them in different contexts where they were put into a position where they had to learn very, very quickly. I know you've discussed that a little bit, but if you have anything more to say about that subject, if there were particular circumstances where you learned something very quickly, we're always interested.
Well, it was interesting that you asked that question, because I really did have on-the-job training. I took over the CRD, if you will, where I told you I had 185 employees and how it was broken out into the different areas where they would register a broker-dealer, or they would register an individual, or people would have disciplinary activity. And I had to have my employees teach me. And it was really fun. And especially when there are X number of questions, like, in the brokerage business, to become licensed to be a broker, you have to complete the U4 questionnaire. And that's a standard questionnaire, still in use today. And there are questions on there. You know, have you ever been arrested? Have you ever this? Have you ever that? Have you ever had a customer complaint? All, you know, they had to answer that. And if, in fact, they answered yes to one of these questions, then they had to provide documents to show how it was remedied or whatever. And I didn't know anything about any of this, and my staff taught me. And so they used to get very excited when I, you know, learned and I knew what I was doing. So that was kind of fun for me. And then again, when I became the corporate secretary, you know, one of the things I had to learn was, how do you define someone, you know, how do you fit all these definitions of a person within the industry, and what makes a person a public board member? So what I learned very quickly was to read the rules. You know, the NASD guidelines, I read all the rules. I could take the rules, I could apply them. And then when I became the corporate secretary, I generally had the bylaws in my hand most of the time, so that every time I had to define something or learn something or be able to pass on something, I had to read those bylaws. Now, what I also had, to my benefit, we had a very good management team at the NASD. The general counsel worked with me very, very closely. Grant Callery, I don't know if you've met Grant or you're interviewing Grant, but I never was in a position that if I was uncomfortable or unsure that I could not have advice of counsel. And Grant had a staff of lawyers in the legal department, you know, in all different areas. They always made themselves available to me and worked with me. So, you know, I never felt in my entire career like I couldn't do my job, because I always knew that I could go and get the help that I needed.
And one of the remarkable things, you've alluded to it before, about the NASD is the sheer number of brokerages that one deals with, but also their the variety of their sizes and the character of the organizations that they deal with. And so that, too, must have been a very a varied experience, I suppose, dealing with one and then the other.
Exactly. I mean, there were all, you know, there were wire houses, there were small firms, there were boutique firms, there was everything.
Well, let's see here. You've mentioned one thing we do tend to ask about already. Again, you've mentioned a couple of mentors, role models, and so forth. But if you, I haven't asked explicitly about it. So if there are others that you'd care to mention or who made a particular impression upon you, that would be very eager to hear about that too.
Well, I think that I would say when I, my very first role at Acacia, a man by the name of Ed Quinn.
Ed Quinn,
he was president of Acacia Equity Sales Corporation and Acacia National. I mean, he showed great respect for me as a woman and for, helped me further my career. And, I mean, when I went to work for him, he said, well, now that we've hired you, you have to get licensed within as soon as possible. And I don't know whether it was a month, so I had to basically apply to the NASD to take the exam. Then I had to study for the exam, and then I had to go and sit for the exam and pass it in order to do my job. And although he was very supportive, he goes, this is a requirement. You've got to get licensed. And I ended up getting licensed. And once I think I proved to him that I was willing to do that, he worked with me in my career. And as I said, to this day is, you know. So I would say he was a significant part of my career. Mary Shapiro, no question about, you know, the respect I have for her and her, the way she treats people, her knowledge, whatever. And then Grant Callery, as the general counsel. So those were the, I would say those are three, those are the three people that if I look back on my career, and you know, could say, wow.
All right. Well, I think that I don't really actually have any further questions.
That's
You've done a marvelous job of explaining all the ins and outs of the positions that you've been in, so I've had to not, you know, probe, I guess, too much into the mechanics of things, which is one of the things that I typically do. So unless there's something else we should cover, I suppose we can wrap it up if you like.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything else that we have to cover. I mean, I just, as I'm talking about this, you know, here I've not been working for almost 5 years. It's a great memory for me. And I feel that I, if I could ever help people in their careers to, you know, to say, everybody's willing to help you if you just open up a little bit and, and work hard. That's it.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure.